Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, and I represent the political center. On the political left is State Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Good morning!
And on the political right, Representative and Senator-elect Dan McKay.
Good morning to everyone.
There are a lot of things to talk about. I want to just start off the program talking about the legacy of George H.W. Bush. Yeah. His funeral this week, probably America's most famous political family, the Kennedys and the Bushes, maybe.
Especially, yeah. Say
something
modern
like
history
that.
For sure, yeah.
You know, I'll start it off by just saying this is a guy that I really came to adore. I loved his speeches. He had a wonderful speech where he introduced himself to the Republican Party after he'd been in the shadows of Reagan for so long. So his first speech, he talked about the bright center of his life. And I just always really related to him. One time I was in the White House, and I haven't been in the White House many times on official work, but one time I was there while I was at EPA, and Joe Paterno and George H.W. Bush poked their head in the room that I was in. And Mike Leavitt, in typical Mike Leavitt fashion, had the great line. He yelled out, "Hey, who's that guy with Joe Paterno?" I thought it was pretty good to do that.
Trump would have fired him.
You know, because when you're in the White House, you always see famous people.
Yeah.
And we were in there hammering down on a mercury regulation. Not a fun thing to be talking about. And I just remember all of a sudden the door cracks open and in looks these two people. And I didn't know who Joe Paterno was. I mean, he was familiar to me. Mm-hmm. But I just thought that was pretty clever of Leavitt. You guys have any H.W. Bush memories?
Quick one. The thing I remember most, and it was just a glancing moment, but it stuck this many years later. Breaking news on CNN, I'm looking out of the corner of my eye, President Obama arrives in Houston, and there on the tarmac, in a wheelchair, is ex-President Bush waiting, just like everybody else there, for the arrival. And later, they had a clip of him saying, "When the President of the United States arrives in my hometown, I'm going to be there, and I could care less if they're a Democrat or a Republican." I think that speaks to the best of him.
Yeah. Dan, what would you want to say about him, either a memory or what does it mean today to have someone of such character and integrity honored as we all deal with our current man in the White House?
Well, I'm not going to
comment. There's a juxtaposition there.
I'm not going to comment on your juxtaposition. I see what you're trying to do here. I'm just going to say that President Bush, the first, H.W. Bush, and I was trying to think of presidential families that might be more influential, right? Mm-hmm. There's really only one other family that's had two presidents, right? You have the Adams. John Adams.
The Adams
and John
family.
Quincy. I was trying to say not the Adams family.
And in their day, they were a pretty big deal.
They were a pretty big deal, right?
Yeah.
So you had the Adams and John Quincy Adams.
Did they have a third that ran for president like the Bushes? Because it's pretty interesting having
Jeb
run.
Was there as well. I will say it is, you're frequently remembered better in death than you are in life. Mm-hmm. And I always think that's a tragedy of the human condition in some ways.
Yeah.
President George H.W. Bush showed a lot of us statesmanship. He also showed us what I thought was a defensible military position. George H.W. Bush showed us when, Saddam Hussein stormed Kuwait, went and, repelled the forces back and didn't go into Baghdad and take over, because he knew at the end of the day that despite the fact that if you kick out the despot, you may destabilize an entire environment, an entire geographic region.
Yeah.
And when you do that, it upsets the entire apple cart.
And you have to get into community building, which you can't do.
And look,
nation state building or whatever you want to call it.
Right. And so then look at George W. Bush's saying, you know what, forget this. We're going all the way to Baghdad. We're going to do some nation building. And we have been in the Middle East, and we will still be in the Middle East for a time to come. Right.
Yeah.
And I look at that kind of, even in that, I think what that highlights as I look back on it is George H.W. Bush was a hero internationally, and because of the economy was not beloved on a local level. And that's why he ended up losing to Bill Clinton.
Yeah. This is not is probably uncouth to talk about.
And he was and hold on before you go uncouth. I will say he was probably you know, I don't know this for sure, but I think he was the last. I think he's the last of our wartime presidents.
Yeah.
But or having served in the military as a young man. But I know George W. also served in the military. But since the, you know, that was it.
Yeah, I have to finish it just because I mentioned that. It's not a good thing after what you just said. But I do remember when President Bush, or they call him Bush 41, lost his dinner at a state dinner in China.
Man. Yeah, Japan.
Japan.
Yeah.
Hey.
That didn't go well.
Yeah. So and always, you know, going into Trump land. But let's talk for just a second about the climate change report that came out. Trump says he doesn't believe the report. Senator-elect Romney has been interesting. He said in the past that climate change is happening and humans are part of it. He's expressed concern about the anti-scientific attitude out there. I'm giving props to Governor Romney, Senator-elect Romney, for standing up for, you know, what I think is true.
That's an interesting point, right? And I do think there's a way to square science. I think there's a way within the Republican Party to take science and figure out how to adapt public policy to make good decisions. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, you know, people use the, you know, like climate report, in other words, to justify their own predetermined decisions on where the policy should be.
Mm-hmm.
And I would argue that's not even what's in the policy briefing, right? The climate report, you know, does make some recommendations about things we can do. But at the end of the day, some of the stuff that is being proffered by some of the groups are just so radical that it's difficult to get consensus around them at mm-hmm. all.
Yeah. Jim, we need your voice here.
Look, science.
We really don't.
Is science.
Whenever you start something with look, you know it's
science
coming.
Science is science. And the Republicans, particularly in Utah, know science. And when they go to the doctor, they don't argue science. But here, politically, because of the extremes in their party, they have to pretend all of this isn't happening. And also, I think that's issue number one. Issue number two is they get so much money from the pollution lobby that we're not deniers in Utah. We're just never talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way the legislature has been. We're not planning, we're not thinking, we're not preparing because we have to bow down to these extremists in the Republican Party. Science is science. Go, Mitt.
Dan, what do you make of Senator-elect Romney? You know, he's got potential here to do something that could be powerful. And so we have Paul Ryan, the House Speaker that's now leaving, saying that Romney could be a moral compass and standard bearer for the GOP. I have this feeling that I don't think it's going to be ambition that makes Romney pop as a national figure in a big way again. I think it's going to be destiny. Meaning if he's
like almost white horse.
Yeah, but he certainly has the chops, you know, the intelligence, the experience, profile to do something big. And if destiny wants that to happen, I think it could.
That would be, it really is, it does feel like this is a different Romney. I mean, I will say, you know, he's...
Instead of ambition, it could be destiny, right?
To borrow from Mia Love, he's unshackled. He just doesn't feel the need to, you know, say what's convenient.
Which will make him a better, interesting. I think, both candidate and elected official. Jim, you see any potential for Romney to become the, let's call it, the foil to the president or to represent a new part of Republican leadership that's needed?
It's not destiny, it's courage.
Okay.
And we'll see if he has it or not. I mean, he said climate change in August. And when the report came out and Trump said what he said, there was silence. I think what's happening with Mitt Romney, I put a post on that said, if he keeps talking like this, this will be the proudest I've ever been of a Utah senator. So I'm the potential to be terribly pleased. But I doubt Mitt Romney knows who Mitt Romney is going to be. That's what people around me are saying. He wants to feel the institution out. He doesn't really know. We'll see how it goes. But usually when people go there with an open mind, they come back with crushed minds on both sides. Let's see if he's got the courage to stand up to it all.
Yeah,
that's an interesting thought.
I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm joined by Senator Jim DeBacchus and Representative Dan McKay. We do have in the studio Ella and Brooklyn. Two visitors here,
yes.
So we're glad to have the younger set here. Dan, this is your daughter and her friend.
Yep, and they're when I told them they had to get up early this morning so that we can come do the show, they were more than excited and ready to jump up.
These guys are
early.
Being a little better behaved than usual. In our next segment, we'll talk about Prop 2.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider a donation to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Dan McKay on the right.
Senator-elect Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. You are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. Big week. Our legislature convened in a special session and passed...
And a rare December special session.
Okay. And passed the Utah Cannabis Act, UCA. Mm-hmm. That always means Utah code annotated
it
to me.
It does, but yeah, that's right.
But the Utah Cannabis Act to replace Prop 2, very controversial to some people because the vote of the people happened and then the legislature within weeks did their own thing. From the political middle, I actually like what they did. I feel like they gave us a more disciplined and, protective piece of legislation. Jim, you say this is all process. So a vote of the people said Prop 2 is what we want. I don't remember the percentages, but they were, 56, 57, 4?
For, no, 60%.
60. So that's mm-hmm. that's huge.
Yeah, it's big.
House passed the Utah Cannabis Act 60-13 and the Senate 22-4. Here's that difference between the people and the legislature.
Not one Republican voted for it.
Not voted for
voted,
Prop 2?
For reinforcing Prop 2, not one.
Oh, I see.
Jim, you handed out gummy candies to legislators. How was that received?
Dan ate them.
Yeah.
I got to say, there were a couple that were offended at legislators.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Oh, come on, guys.
Get a life is what I say. but almost everybody was fine.
The whole
Jim,
Prop 2
I get that the process was messed up, but I actually like where we landed.
It wasn't messed up.
Well, I think it's messed up because I think shame on the legislature for not passing something that prevented.
Okay, that's messed up. I'm in
a bad proposition.
Yeah, The proposition itself highlights what is the problem with citizen initiatives. They're imperfect. They're not scalpels. Citizens draft
them. They're emotional.
They're citizens draft them. One key way to highlight that there was a problem was law enforcement was no longer allowed to, you know, as of last Friday, law enforcement was no longer, you know, they were given the memo not to enforce possession of marijuana under 4 ounces, 4 ounces and under. And they're saying, hey, you know, we don't know what to do with it, so everybody can have marijuana is basically what the law enforcement mm-hmm. position was. And that in and of itself highlights some problems with Prop 2. If we're going to do a measured response where we step into the water slowly, I get it. Jim likes, and I love Jim for a lot of reasons. This one, he's just wrong on. He wants, and many on his side, want full recreational marijuana. Everybody gets everything.
Free the people.
Just free the people, right? And I get that. Unfortunately, Jim, not enough people in Utah have died yet to have the majority of the population agree with you. I think if recreational marijuana had been on the ballot, it goes down handily. I don't think it would have gotten more than 30% on the ballot. And that said, they were all looking for Prop 2 to be the gateway into everybody having recreational marijuana. And
Jim,
as we see by law enforcement members, that's what was the intent. That's where it was going.
Jim, what specifically in the Utah Cannabis Act do you oppose?
My friends, every Republican in the legislature voted to create the largest bureaucracy in a one fell swoop that we've ever had. From this astonishing,
he's never been
amazing,
out to Utah.
Amazing.
Yeah, let's say.
In one fell swoop, there. We have more bureaucrats. We've got people setting up dispensaries. We've got health department employees. We've got a pay system that is run by the state. We got $11 million flowing in and then flowing out after year two. We've got dozens of new employees. You know what? We don't need this bureaucracy. We don't need the state keeping track of every plant 8 inches or higher. You can't imagine how this is going to be intrusive. in every single way. It's 200 pages of big government, nanny state, the taking total
Jim,
control.
Do you have any soft spot in your policy mind that it's not good to make marijuana more available? In other words, that it can...
It is available right now. It's available. Tens of thousands of Utahns are going and getting it every single day.
My kids would agree with that. I just feel like the fact that we put up protections in terms of the distribution of it will help us to have fewer unintended consequences.
They're ridiculous, bureaucratic blah, 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 that are going to have the effect of keeping the suffering people from getting it because there is so much government crap. It's astonishing when you go and look at that bill.
Let me read a couple of key differences and see if you guys have any comment here. The bill removes Prop 2 language permitting anyone with an autoimmune disorder to qualify.
No, that's not true.
Okay.
What it has is Crohn's is on there. It does have, you know, pain, and it also has the Compassionate Use Board, which says, hey, if your doctor and you take a recommendation.
I love
and
this
you
Compassionate
deserve,
Use
yeah.
Board. That's clever.
It takes it out as a blanket because it's too catch-all. It's like saying everybody who has heart problems qualifies for one medicine.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
That doesn't work.
Fair enough. I don't know. Jim? Okay. Requires businesses selling medical cannabis to employ a licensed pharmacist.
24 hours a day. Their average pay is somewhere around $97,000, $98,000. So you got a little place in Panguitch. It's part of the central distribution. You've got places. Suddenly, who's going to pay for that?
Okay. Limits.
Just like those who are buying prescriptions today. See, this is the whole thing, Jim. And this is what people can't wrap their mind around. And this is where Governor Herbert was. He was right. The church was right. A lot of people were right on this whole deal. It really centers around three principles. You've got real doctors, you've got real pharmacies and pharmacists, and you've got real access, right? So you go down those three elements and you can figure out basically how this law works. It's going to work for most people.
For
from
real,
the outside,
genuine uses of medical
For real,
marijuana.
Genuine use of medical marijuana. It is going to function much like your
DABC.
prescription today, and from your doctor, and the only thing that's going to be different is the location you have to pick it up from is probably going to be a little further distance than the Walgreens down the road.
Yeah, Dan
this
and Jim, am I right that the legislation limits the authorized forms to capsule, chewables, dissolvable gelatins, concentrated oils, but that there's no smoking?
That's correct.
I mean, that's. Yeah.
The nanny state is there. Yep, we ought to do that. We ought to stop people. Some people may find that's the best way to use it. Who are you all to say, no, we don't want people smoking that as a thing? They can smoke, but not this. That's the whole problem. This is like this giant overlord. And we didn't talk about process, but I'm going to speak for a majority of the voters. I'm going to speak for the tens of thousands of people who cross this unbelievably high burden of getting something on the ballot with signatures. I am going to speak for a lot of people who feel like they were spit in the face as this little group led by Marty Stevens, who's the head of the LDS Church's lobbying group, as he gathered around him some other... That's the truth. People don't want to say that, but that's what happened. You got the
that
medical,
isn't who it was led by.
You get it. You get
Greg
the,
Hughes grabbed everybody and brought them.
You
the
get the
room.
Medical Association, and you also get Connor Boyack, who's supposedly speaking for the patients, but they don't think so. And they all get in a room, and they announce, listen to the smugness and arrogance of this, no matter how the people vote, our little group is going to, this is what's going to happen. And all the little Republican leaders go, yep, that's what's going to happen. Give me a break. Mm. The people are sovereign according to the Constitution, not a smug group of legislators and lobbyists.
Why do we have to be smug, Jim?
When I hear Jim talk, it makes me think that this issue isn't over.
There's no way this is over.
Yeah.
Here's what I will say, and just as a parting word, and for Jim and for everyone else.
Who disagrees with you listening
to this program.
Who disagrees
with us, right? Every law is subject to revision, and I believe we will be 10 years down the road from right now. And I said this yesterday, that I really do think we are debating recreational marijuana within the next 10 years.
Can I just say I think it's over? I do think it's over.
Oh, okay.
I think this group, what they've been put through the spanking machine of the people, they're not going to touch marijuana, cannabis for the next 20 years. It's just not going to happen. It's going to be what it is, and it is a catastrophe.
Sometimes you come up with the best one.
My greatest hope, I'm always, you know, the optimist sitting in the political middle, but I want the FDA and our federal government to do the research and figure this out and treat it. If it is such a magical drug, then let's get it in the system.
Can we highlight that all of this is still illegal, Jim? All of this is.
Dan, why don't you and your Republican friends go do a visit to the Republican delegation and now add Ben McAdams and get them to show some leadership there? We keep taking this as the model legislation, you know, in the country, but let's also get our Utah delegation to show some leadership.
Well, I think that's a very good push, and I think there's I know there are things going on.
Let's get Greg Hughes at the FDA.
I know, that'd be great. I just think
of that bull in the china closet.
I just think though that it's not the end of the policy. There's still a long way to go on this and many other things.
You did a few other things in the special session. The one that I found most interesting, and this is sort of nuanced for listeners, but we have a lot of money up on Capitol Hill. We're in the second longest economic expansion in our state's history. A lot of revenue up there. They took $235 million off the table for the general session by passing legislation that will pay cash for this first part of the state prison. That is smart, Dan. Very clever.
Well, yeah, and that's really
when I
what
say
it
it's
is.
Smart. What I mean is, all the costs that you're going to save, either the issuing costs or the interest costs, by paying cash for something, also taking it off the table so that there's not such a food fight for all this money.
The interest in bond costs for me, I'm not as worried about it. But for me, I think about taking money off the table as being wise when you're looking at. And you were here during the $1 billion, you know, surplus year during
sometimes,
Leavitt's year. And,
yeah, sure.
And that was a tough year.
Well, you know, the big thing that Leavitt did that some people don't remember, but he made a conscious effort to say, what could I use this surplus for?
Yeah.
And he did the rebuild of the state capitol.
And it was infrastructure, right? And
yeah they did a lot of things, but the big thing he did was say, let's double down and earthquake-proof the capitol, and it is an edifice that will, you know, stand for generations.
Yeah, and it's in large part to the sacrifices that were made back then.
So Herbert's going to have a prison. Leavitt has a... That's a capital.
Yeah. Well, and poor Herbert.
No, I'm just saying that. Boom. No, but I'm saying Herbert's doing something good here. Like, we, you know,
I don't think he's moving
the prison.
I don't know if that's what you're saying, Natalie. I'm giving you a little.
No. I'm just saying it's funny how timing works.
Yeah,
that's true. Because it wasn't time to do the prison with Leavitt.
The center and the right.
It takes a lot more political courage to do what Herbert's doing.
The center and the right are wrong again. I mean, it is. First of all, interest rates are at a historic low. I don't know why we wouldn't be borrowing now to do things, A. B, you know what? We've got a starving child there.
What historic low are you looking at?
We are in the greatest economic boom in the history of the state, if you listen to the governor, and we still rank 50th in education funding. We're not funneling everything we can to education. We're doing a lot of dumb stuff. This is a part of it.
We need to go to gripes, but as we do that, I'll just throw out, we do have new population estimates for the state. The deceleration. Growth rate dropped from 1.9% to 1.7%.
Yep.
Net migration fell, and births are down to not a historic low, but the lowest in over a decade.
That's because they keep hearing Jim wants to raise taxes on families. So this will hurt us economically.
Yeah.
Dan, I start hearing that number drop.
Talking about that's not even replacement, right? 1.7 is that replacement?
That's a growth rate, and the fertility rate is where you do that. But so the fertility rate in the state right now is down to 2.1.
2.12,
and that is
to the
about
Institute,
replacement level.
Yep. We still had a net increase of 51,000 people.
52,000
people. And once we drop below that 2 number, Natalie, you and I both know, rare
just like
is
the
it
United
that you come
States.
Back. That's
right. Yeah, that's cool. Dan, let's go to you for a gripe.
My gripe this morning is, you know, I was really disheartened to hear about the, you know, we had somebody show up in a Salt Lake tire shop yelling about Mexicans and wanted to, you know, kill somebody. And here's a family that is trying to build a business and is trying to do the right thing, and you have something like this happen. It's just when stuff like this happens, I think my gripe is I keep thinking we're past stupid things like this. I keep thinking this kind of behavior is over. We're not going to see this anymore. That kind of stuff is done, and it just, I don't know. Just kind of breaks my heart.
Can I just follow up on that gripe?
Yeah.
Hate crimes are a deal. I mean, it's one thing when somebody sprays graffiti on a garage. It's another thing when they put a swastika on the garage door of a Jewish person. These hate crimes have an effect for a whole community. The state has no hate crimes legislation. We got some toothless thing that has never, ever been used statutorily. It's time, 2019, for a hate crimes bill.
My gripe is the wage gap that exists in Utah. I saw that Pat Jones and Derek Miller had a nice press conference where they announced a new booklet that has best practices for businesses to deal with the wage gap. I think it's something that's overdue. I've been chatting with my kids about it, and they don't understand it. It's so foreign to them. Why does this exist? So, hey, you've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, joined by Jim DeBacchus and Dan McKay. The program is produced by Emily Means. Thanks for listening.